Blog Talk Radio. all over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic,
yeah.
Not a democracy.
All right, we got it now.
All over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy. All right.
I'm always wondering what the founders, what they thinking. Where's our Washingtons, our Thomasins, our Jeffersons and Lincolns? Why you had the red carpet club partying and drinking the U.S. says liberty is steadily sinking. So let me tell you what's really going on. Hope the change is code for your liberty gone. Yes, we can propaganda for a socialist song. You need to realize he's breaking America's bond. It's planned all along, and you need to realize that winning the future is just a future full of lies.
Yeah.
Wearing a disguise, let it drill in the dome. Because behind it keeps growing, you know that you're just a woke. Alright,
all over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy. All right. All over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy. All right.
The heart of a coward caught in foreign policy forgets we are endowed by your creator. No apology. Rule more like a king when we were just some colonies of patriots on marching, creating the greatest following, especially with the president like Barack Hussein, who proved he'd rather be playing a golf game than take care of the lame, the sick and heavy laden. Instead of helping Libya, he just spit on the nation. But what can you expect from a FDR clone with no guts? You lost our trust, you ain't got a backbone. Chicago is your home, it shouldn't be DC. We the people speaking up, tell me can you hear? We all right.
All over the world, Obama. Keep singing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy. All right. All over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy. All right.
For Barack is soon to set sail. Vote for always just hope and fail. I'd rather have a tax break than any light rail. A poet you can stick to with word from his campaign trail. His issue with integrity, it is very evident. Guantanamo being only one piece of the evidence. Flip-flops to D.C. would be a nice sentiment. Come this election, I hope we change the president, all right.
All over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy, all right. All over the world, Obama. Keep bringing that liberal drama. Failed policy after failed policy. God saved a republic, we're not a democracy.
Not a democracy,
all right.
All right. Okay, now, bugs worked out, kinks worked out, all is well. We have a full house tonight. I got many guests, some of them from some of my guys from Camp Pendleton, some of my guys from Quantico, some of my guys from the Naval Annex in D.C. Thank you all for being here. Some of you are here as guests, and others are here who have signed on. Great. Tonight we're going to talk about the elephant in the room, if you will. It's all going to be about socialism, communism versus capitalism. And we've got some special guest clips here tonight. We've got my main man, my idol, besides my father and my mother, a man I respected and thought so much of over the years. And I cried. I'll admit it. I cried when he died. I cried most of the day. It was really sad. And I'll tell you what, I watched his services after his funeral services, and as he lay in state, and I visited Washington D.C. and I stood in line for the services for hours and hours, and I finally got a chance to pass by the casket and touch it, and let Ronnie know how I felt. A brief story about my relationship with President Reagan. Young Marine officers, first lieutenants and captains, are picked every year from the surrounding D.C. area for the governor's ball. And during the governor's ball, just before the ball begins, the governor's ball at the White House, Marine officers escort the governor's ladies into the ballroom and to be seated. And so we're basically we're escorts for the governor's wives. And I had been picked for the second governor's ball in a row, and I got a call, and I was stationed at Quantico at the time, and I got a call, and believe this or not, but it was the president himself on the phone requesting that I show up for the second year in a row to escort a particular governor's lady, the governor of Arizona at the time. He just happened to be the governor who is infamous for denying or not approving the Martin Luther King holiday. It was the only state in the union who refused. His governor, Evan Meekum, I think is his name, and I'd done so well the year before with Governor Meekum's wife. She had made a personal request that I be her escort for that evening. She stated that I made her feel as though she was the only lady in the room. And I think I really do appreciate that. That was a great compliment for me. And so he called me and he said, Marine, I want you to be here. I thought I'd give you a call myself. I want you to be there or be square. Those were his exact words, President of the United States, President Ronald Wilson Reagan. I was a Republican from then on. And that's a true story, and I don't tell it very often, but I just told it now, and wow, I sure did admire that man, really. It's the only conversation I ever had with him. I got a letter of commendation with his signature on it, and I've got it hanging on the wall here in my home office. That's a true story. Yep. So on with the program. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Feel free to call in and voice your opinion as to whether or not socialism is an option. Because I know that Tesler agrees that socialism is not an option. Is socialism an option? I don't know. Let's find out. Socialism is an economic and political theory. And it's based on public ownership, or perhaps common ownership, and cooperative management of the means of production, factories and overall businesses, and it involves the allocation of resources. As an economic system, socialism is an organization in which production is carried out by a public association of producers to directly maximize use values. Does that make any sense? Socialism is a set of social and economic arrangements based on a post-monetary system of calculation, usually implying calculation based on some physical magnitude, such as labor time or energy units, that kind of thing. It's complicated. It's nearly as complicated as capitalism. Socialists advocate a method of compensation based on individual merit or the amount of labor one contributes to society. Does that sound so bad? Does it? Socialists generally share the view that capitalism unfairly concentrates power and wealth among a small segment of society that controls capital and derives its wealth through a system of exploitation. There's that nasty word. They argue that this creates an unequal society that fails to provide equal opportunities for everyone to maximize their potential and does not utilize technology and resources to their maximum potential in the interest of the public. Does anybody agree with that? Does anyone believe that? Because I don't believe that Obama is a communist, but I do believe that he is a socialist. He has made it quite clear. To anyone who's listening, President Obama has made it clear that he is a socialist. He's not come out and said so, but does he have to? No, he doesn't. Now, our wisest philosophers have frequently stated that the government is best which governs the least. And I agree. Socialism and communism are forms of government that opposes individualism. They are similar to that. They're actually collectives, and I don't need to lecture my audience on what the difference is between socialism and other forms of Marxism and communism and all of that. We know the perils of it because of history. History has taught us that socialism, Marxism, communism simply does not work. But there's always someone who's trying to build a better mousetrap or reinvent the wheel. Because men, and by men I mean women, men and women, human beings are egotist. We all believe that we can, just because it didn't work in this society at this time doesn't mean it won't work now. I can do it. We can do this, but we just have to do it better. We just have to work out the kinks. Isn't that how we think all the time about things? Free societies tend to become socialist or communist over time. But since socialism eventually destroys economies, they may eventually return to being free after economic conditions become intolerable. So intolerable that people hold revolution, as we've seen in the Soviet Union. So, what's right and what's wrong? Is it possible that we could live better under socialism? I don't think so. But there are those who do. Maxine Waters wants to run everybody's company to better maximize the potential. It's interesting. For me, it makes absolutely no sense. But there are those who believe that socialism is an option, and a viable one at that. Take what's happening in England right now, in the UK. We all have seen what has occurred. Looting, rioting, all as an excuse. Taking from the rich. Stealing, robbing from stores. Young men bragging that they've got free TVs and free money and free this and free that, because they've taken from those who had more. What's the solution here? Capitalism versus socialism. After President Obama was elected, the socialists felt emboldened. They came out of the woodwork. It's like it was time for every socialist to come out of the closet and proclaim that they are socialist, and that we should have government taking over our country, our companies, managing auto companies. The president himself just the other day said that car manufacturers should understand the market, that they don't understand the market. They should stop producing SUVs and trucks. SUVs and trucks have their place, he said. But what the public wants is fuel-efficient vehicles. How the hell does he know? And why would the President of the United States get involved in what companies produce what product? Since when does the President of the United States get involved in these things? Are we not living in perilous times where we have a president who is seeking to completely and utterly alter, to fundamentally transform the United States of America? But he didn't say what, did he? But now we're getting an idea. So I'm going to play a brief clip of my main man, Ronald Wilson Reagan. No. No, let's start off here. I'm going to play a clip from one of my favorite movies about capitalism called Other People's Money. Remember the movie Other People's Money starring Danny DeVito? We're going to play a clip here. And the first clip is going to be of the person who is the adversary of DeVito, who is seeking to save a company in a small town, even though the company is obsolete and people will be put out of work. I'm going to play this clip, and then please feel free to call in and tell me what you think. Take a listen.
Good to see so many familiar faces, so many old friends. Some of you I haven't seen in years. Well, thank you for coming. Bill Coles, our able president, in the annual report has told you of our year, of what we accomplished, of the need for further improvements, our business goals for next year and the years beyond. I'd like to talk to you about something else. I want to share with you some of my thoughts concerning the vote that you're going to make in the company that you own. This proud company, which has survived the death of its founder, numerous recessions, one major depression, and two world wars, is in imminent danger of self-destructing. On this day, in the town of its birth. There is the instrument of our destruction. I want you to look at him in all of his glory, Larry the Liquidator, the entrepreneur of post-industrial America, playing God with other people's money. The robber barons of old at least left something tangible in their wake. A coal mine, a railroad, banks. This man leaves nothing. He creates nothing. He builds nothing. He runs nothing. And in his wake lies nothing but a blizzard of paper to cover the pain. Oh, if he said, I know how to run your business better than you, that would be something worth talking about, but he's not saying that. He's saying, I'm going to kill you because at this particular moment in time, you're worth more dead than alive. Well, maybe that's true, but it is also true that one day this industry will turn. One day when the yen is weaker, the dollar is stronger, or when we finally begin to rebuild our roads, our bridges, the infrastructure of our country, demand will skyrocket. And when those things happen, we will still be here, stronger because of our ordeal, stronger because we have survived. And the price of our stock will make his offer pale by comparison. God save us if we vote to take his paltry few dollars and run? God save this country, if that is truly the wave of the future. We will then have become a nation that makes nothing but hamburgers, creates nothing but lawyers, and sells nothing but tax shelters. And if we are at that point in this country where we kill something because at the moment it's worth more dead than alive, well, take a look around. Look at your neighbor. Look at your neighbor. You won't kill him, will you? No. It's called murder. And it's illegal. Well, this too is murder on a mass scale. Only on Wall Street, they call it maximizing shareholder value. And they call it legal. And they substitute dollar bills where a conscience should be. Damn it. A business is worth more than the price of its stock. It's the place where we earn our living, where we meet our friends, dream our dreams. It is, in every sense, the very fabric that binds our society together. So let us now, at this meeting, say to every Garfield in the land, here we build things, we don't destroy them. Here we care about more than the price of our stock. Here we care about people.
Very moving. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Very moving. When I first heard Gregory Peck's plea, his version, I agreed with it. I was like, yeah, exactly. I dig it. Danny DeVito's character, he's an evil money grubber. He's an evil money grubber who wants to kill this company, rob it, and gut it, and sell it off for pieces. How horrible. What a horrible little man. Sure, he was charming for the whole movie right up to this point. But I was thinking, what an ass. Has anybody else seen the movie? Other People's Money? It's a great, charming movie. And Penelope, what's her name? I always thought she was very cute. But nevertheless, then I listened to DeVito's character as he approached the mic. And then I had a change of heart. I understood. Tell me if I'm wrong. Listen to DeVito's rebuttal. And tell me what you think. I would really like to know. Who's right? Gregory Peck's character or DeVito's character? Let's take a listen to DeVito right now.
Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce Mr. Lawrence Garfield. Mr. Garfield, excuse me, please, let's show a little courtesy, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Garfield is the president and the chairman of the board of Garfield Investments. Mr. Garfield.
Amen. And amen. And amen. You have to forgive me, I'm not familiar with the local custom. Where I come from, you always say amen after you hear a prayer. Because that's what you just heard. A prayer. Where I come from, that particular prayer is called the prayer for the dead. You just heard the prayer for the dead, my fellow stockholders, and you didn't say amen. This company is dead. I didn't kill it. Don't blame me. It was dead when I got here. It's too late for prayers. For even if the prayers were answered, and a miracle occurred, and the yen did this, and the dollar did that, and the infrastructure did the other thing, we would still be dead. You know why? Fiber optics. New technologies. Obsolescence. We're dead, all right. We're just not broke. And do you know the surest way to go broke? Keep getting an increasing share of a shrinking market. Down the tubes. Slow but sure. You know, at one time there must have been dozens of companies making buggy whips. And I'll bet the last company around was the one that made the best goddamn buggy whip you ever saw. Now, how would you have liked to have been a stockholder in that company? You invested in a business, and this business is dead. Let's have the intelligence, let's have the decency to sign the death certificate, collect the insurance, and invest in something with a future. Ah, but we can't. Goes the prayer. We can't, because we have a responsibility. A responsibility to our employees, to our community. What will happen to them? I got two words for that. Who cares? Care about them? Why? They didn't care about you. They sucked you dry. You have no responsibility to them. For the last 10 years, this company bled your money. Did this community ever say, we know times are tough. We'll lower taxes, reduce water and sewer. Check it out. You're paying twice what you did 10 years ago. And our devoted employees, who have taken no increases for the past 3 years, are still making twice what they made 10 years ago. And our stock, 1/6 what it was 10 years ago. Who cares? I'll tell you. Me. I'm not your best friend. I'm your only friend. I don't make anything. I'm making you money. Unless we forget, that's the only reason any of you became stockholders in the first place. You want to make money. You don't care if they manufacture wire and cable, fry chicken, or grow tangerines. You want to make money. I'm the only friend you've got. I'm making you money. Take the money. Invest it somewhere else. Maybe. Maybe you'll get lucky, and it'll be used productively. And if it is, you'll create new jobs and provide a service for the economy, and God forbid, even make a few bucks for yourselves. And if anybody asks, tell them you gave it the plant. And by the way, it pleases me that I'm called Larry the Liquidator. You know why, fellow stockholders? Because at my funeral, you'll leave with a smile on your face and a few bucks in your pocket. Now that's a funeral worth having.
You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Is he right? Or is Gregory Peck's character right? Who's right? Who's right? We have in this country those who would say tax the rich. We have an administration that is regulating companies and corporations and small businesses out of existence. There will be massive job loss in the near future that will dwarf what's happening now as a result of overregulation and increased taxation. The stuff that DeVito's character spoke about. So who's right? Is it DeVito's character? Well, let's ask our caller, since he's rattling around in the background. 772, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Well, hello, how are you? This is Tesler.
Tesler, there he is.
You know, that's a very interesting play piece that you played. Because in many respects, to me, the way I looked at it, it really showed the two sides of being a capitalist, and not necessarily the side of being a socialist. In other words, when I looked at those two pieces, and I listened to them very carefully. On the one side, you have a person, the first character. Very conservative, very, oh my goodness, very positive. And he represents, in many ways, the positive side of conservatism, of capitalism. And yet, Mr. DeVito actually represents not so much a socialist side, but the negative side. The side of those that are full of need and negativism. Yet, when you look at today's economy, when you look at the way people look at each other today, I hate to say this, but Daddy DeVito's character is closer to what it is today than it ever has been in the past. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. I believe that both characters are right. Danny DeVito's character is absolutely right. By a nose. And Gregory Peck's character, and for those of you who came in late, we're talking about the movie, the ending of the movie, Other People's Money, where a speech is given for the saving of a company that's been in existence for more than 100 years, and
right.
Danny DeVito's character, who is coming in as the liquidator, the major
right.
shareholder, who wants to liquidate the company and pay off the shareholders and sell the rest off piece by piece. So Gregory Peck's impassioned plea to save the company is noble.
Yes,
but
not true.
It is. But it is not reality.
No, it's not.
As DeVito indicated, I mean, the company was obsolete. And early in the movie, there was a move to bring the company into the 21st century that was resisted by Peck's character and the shareholders. They failed to bring the company up to snuff. And so now the company has become obsolete and a liability, such to the extent that the company was worth more in individual pieces than it
yes.
was as a whole. And so DeVito was saying, let's make money while we can. Otherwise, your town is going to become a ghost town. This company's going to go into receivership and be sold off anyway, but at a lesser price. Who do you think was right, Tesler?
I don't think there's any question in that, except that Danny DeVito's character is 100% correct. And the reason why it has become correct, and I hate to say this, and I don't want to sound like a negative person, the fact is, in this day and age, people believe that stuff. You know, there once was a time, and that's so long ago, in which a movie like It's a Wonderful Life, people believed it. They don't anymore, yeah. Doc. They don't. And his character, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. I'm not saying he's correct, but unfortunately, my own personal experience has led me to believe that this is the way we've become. There is no more.
Yeah.
You know the point I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I do indeed. We have other callers on the line, 508 and 317. What do you think? Did you listen to the clip, and what are your thoughts? We'll start with 508. Hello, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, 508. All right, 508 is going, is having some issues. So we'll go with 317. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Hey, Dr. Jones, this is Steve from Indianapolis again.
Steve.
I've seen the movies and DeVito and different things, but I wouldn't. I just tuned into the show. But just based off the topic, socialism, capitalism, people are looking for fairness. I think the biggest change we have is, back in the day, when I researched history, folks used to be able to just put their money in the savings, retire after a certain amount of time. Nowadays, people are, you know, through the change in the laws, they're dealing with investing in the stock market, losing their savings, 10,000 baby boomers retiring every year. They're worried about the government cutting the safety net. And since 2008, if the economy had grew at a good percentage, we would almost have a balanced budget today. The reason the budget is so off track is because of the fact that since 2008, the economy has barely grown. So so we need the safety net to, in good times, we can afford more for the safety net. In bad times, we have to cut back, and people don't want to hear that. We have an investor, an information age, an investor age type of economy, where you have to be flexible, whether if it's gold, silver, stocks, bonds, commodities. People want the banks. They want the government to take care of them. And that's, we're not in that age of America now. Now the unions are no longer. We're in the age where, you know, if you win or lose, people don't want to hear that. They say this is America. It's unacceptable that we have to live in these conditions as seniors and being retired. And a lot of the major voting blocks for Republicans are going to be changing to – they're going to be seniors, 10,000 seniors retiring every day, and they may vote liberal, and that's my concern. So we have to get the commercials out about hyperinflation destroying seniors in the middle class. We've got to let these people know that, we can print up $120 trillion. We can have Ben Bernanke print $120 trillion over the next 10, 11 years, but it's going to destroy this economy. And the reason the Bush tax cuts didn't work, because we had a weak dollar. When Reagan was in there, we had a strong dollar. You can't practice Reaganomics with a weak dollar. And Ben Bernanke keep printing. So a lot of what Reagan represents, it makes sense. It works. The problem is we don't live in the Reagan type of economy. This is a world economy. Back in the 80s, we weren't in a World Trade Organization. We didn't have free trade. So we have to be flexible to what we, to how we live today. But I didn't tune in to listen to the deal. But I'm just giving my assumptions based on the topic of the show, sir.
Got it. Understood. Let me ask this. Tesla, you have a show, a very popular show. Folks tune in from all around. The title is Socialism is Not an Option. tell us, if you will, why socialism is not an option.
Socialism continues to not be an option because of the basic concept what socialism represents. Look, what it does, and we're not talking about communism, which is a higher level of effective collective thought. When we're talking about socialism, we're talking about the state guaranteeing or collecting the benefits mm-hmm. of the folks through its businesses, so that all folks benefit in the same way. The problem with socialism is it doesn't work that way. There can never be any kind of collectivism in which all folks will always benefit in exactly the same way. There will always be a disparity. There will always be a difference. And as a result, it's a difference that we have to deal with. But yet people like Obama and those that believe in that concept honestly believe that those of us or other folks who have earned their money in ways that are positive should pass those ways to those who don't have money. And somehow when you think about that, it doesn't work. It never has. It never has worked for 100 years. Socialism will never be an option in the sense that it cannot work in the positive way that they will suggest it. It just can't. Go ahead.
It can't work. Well, you know what, Tesler? I'm glad you summed it up that way, because my girl and yours, Margaret Thatcher, is going to throw it out there just like you did, but a little bit more fiery. And here it is. Take a listen, folks, and comment if you will. Margaret's going to put it out there for you.
To the Honourable Gentleman.
There is no doubt that the Prime Minister has in many ways achieved substantial success. There is one statistic that I understand is not, however, challengeable, and that is that over her 11 years, the gap between the richest 10% and the poorest 10% in this country has widened substantially. How can she say at the end of her chapter of British politics that she can justify many people in a constituency such as mine being relatively much poorer, much less well-housed, and much less well-provided than it was in 1979? Surely she accepts that is not a record that she or any Prime Minister can be proud of.
Mr. Speaker, all levels of income are better off than they were in 1979. But what the Honourable Member is saying is that he would rather the poor were poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That way you will never create the wealth for better social services as we have. And what a policy! Yes, he would rather have the poor poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That is a liberal policy. Yes, it came out. He didn't intend it to, but he did.
I give way to the Honourable Gentleman.
I'm extremely grateful. The Prime Minister is aware that I detest every single one of her domestic policies, and I've never had that.
And I think that the Honourable Gentleman knows that I have the same contempt for his socialist policies as the people of East Europe who have experienced it have it for that. I think I must have hit the right nail on the head when I pointed out that the logic of those policies are they'd rather have the poor poorer. Once they start to talk about the gap, they'd rather the gap were that. Down here. That. Not that. That. So long as the gap is smaller, so long as the gap is smaller, they'd rather have the poor
for us. You do not create wealth and opportunity that way. You do not create a poverty-owning democracy that way.
Is Lady Margaret correct?
Oh, my God.
Is she right? Before we get to you, Tesler, let's see if 508 still wanting to get in here. 508, you're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. Hello? Okay, 508's not ready yet. When you're ready, go ahead and chime in, 508. Tesler.
Of course, that's the Iron Lady, I think she was called back in those days. A wonderful, wonderful speaker, obviously. And her basic concept is very clear, that the discrepancy in those who live, those who have, and those who do not, is not completed with socialism, simply because you cannot have a socialist society in which those that do not have are taking from those that do have. And why do they have it? Why do those more wealthy people have it? Because they've created wealth. They've created business. They've created opportunity for people to learn, have an earning. That's the basic concept in capitalism. But that is the basic socialism. That is the basic concept that people fail to understand even in this country. The reason why you have what you have is because of this capitalism. And while you may not like the fact that your neighbor, your friend, your neighbor has more, may have a bigger house than you have, my God, at least he has one. At least he has one home, one car. Maybe your neighbor has two, but that's the point. At least they have them. But in socialism, they have neither. And that's what people don't seem to understand. Go ahead.
You're exactly right. Let's just go ahead and touch on socialism versus capitalism and the origins of that. And I'll be brief when I give the definitions. Although capitalism had always been and has always been present in previous and even some current civilizations, it was for the first time introduced as an economic and political system by a man named Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations. And that was published in the year 1776.
Right.
Yes. Socialism came forth on its own in the 18th century during the Industrial Revolution, when the workers lived in miserable conditions while the factory owners grew wealthier by the day. The workers formed trade unions and wanted to share in the profits of the factory owners. Socialism was formally introduced as a political philosophy in the 1848 book The Communist Manifesto, written by anybody?
Karl Marx.
That's exactly
Karl
right.
Marx.
And Frederick Engels. Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys are great. Wow, I should get back in the classroom. Oh, man. I tell you what. So the difference between socialism and capitalism. To truly understand what is socialism and what is capitalism, the difference between the two have to be completely understood. The capitalists believe that there should be a complete non-interference by government in the economy, something that we unfortunately do not have with this current administration. They believe that an economy can run efficiently on its own through the natural mechanism of supply and demand. Capitalism is a political theory that advocates competition between the sellers to supply a particular good or service. Don't we love it? And between the buyers to get the services or the goods. The sellers compete amongst themselves so that they make the maximum profit. Buyers compete amongst themselves to get the best deal while purchasing the goods. Capitalists strive for a free market economy and also advocate what? Private ownership of the means of production. We dig it. We love it. But this current administration doesn't believe in that. It's obvious. Socialists, on the other hand. Yeah. Socialists, on the other hand, propagated and propagate that the state or the government is the one which should be in total control of the planning, production, and distribution process of everything. The political theory of socialism advocates cooperation rather than competition, which is capitalism's mainstay. It's capitalism's bread and butter. The socialists believe that wealth or profits made from means of production should be owned by the state and that it will be used fairly for the welfare of all. Aw, how sweet. Rather than just the elite class. The socialism is based on the philosophy that an individual will become more ethical and dedicated toward his work when he is receiving what he wants, when he is working for everyone else in the society, and thus people do not need any kind of competition to propel them to work. No competition. By the way, as a side note, back when I was a kid, we competed. There were winners and there were losers. When we won, we got the fine trophy. When we lost, we received no trophy. Perhaps an honorable mention. Now, back in the mid-80s, early 90s, things seemed to change, didn't they? I took my kids to soccer, and everyone got a trophy. There were no winners. There were no losers. Everybody won, and thus no one won. My youngest son, Nicholas, has dozens of soccer trophies from dozens of years of playing soccer. After the end of the season, every single child received a trophy of some kind. In my mind, now that I consider it, because I didn't consider it much back then, that was in preparation for socialism, where everyone is rewarded regardless of whether they are better suited for the task or not. Doesn't make any difference. Anybody? 508, are you on? Nope. Steve.
He's probably listening. Yeah. You know, what it is, Dr. Jones, see, in the 90s, when the economy is real good, Nobody complains about capitalism. So what it is people in America want a flexible government where if the economy's doing bad, the government's there. I've been telling people for years we're in a socialist country, even before Obama came. I've been telling people, hey, if you add up the $2-3 trillion in regulations, Sarbanes-Oxley and all the other regulations, we're as big as Europe. If you add in all the regulation costs. You know, a true free market doesn't have unemployment and food stamps and all these other things. We're like in a mixed economy, but I consider socialist. We're in a socialist country right now, but a lot of people don't believe that. But when the economy is doing good, people will kiss capitalism on his forehead. You're a good guy. When the economy is doing bad, people will punch capitalism right in his jaw. And we need some government benefits. That's how the people react in America to a bad economy. And so Bush and Obama both have their part because if the government – see, I think people are more frustrated with the banks because they haven't made any sacrifices. The banks came in and got all this bailout money. I would have let them collapse. And, you know, I don't believe in bailing out banks. And then – they turn around now, and they're not even loaning out money to businesses that's been in business 20 years. You got construction projects, can't get a loan for anything from the bank. These are the same banks that receive bailout money. They're not want to loan it out now. So it's a lot of things. Lowest small business creation since 1983. The Obamacare and all these regulations. And they think, oh, we can, like Atlas Shrugged, we could just, you know, punch the businessman upside the head and then tell him to hire me. It doesn't work that way. And Obama doesn't, he doesn't get it. He just thinks, you know, he can hold a gun to their head and create more jobs. And it doesn't work that way. Because now they can go overseas and create jobs. And Obama, he does, we need to get, he needs to send his ass back to Chicago as quick
or
as possible.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Tesla, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, Tesla, when I talked about the differences between socialism and capitalism, why do you think that there are so many Americans coming out of the closet, if you will, advocating socialism?
Well, part of it is because part of it is because of what the gentleman just last said. You know, it's a very interesting concept what he spoke about. When times are good, when economic times are good, we all love capitalism. Oh yeah, let's make that buck. Let's buy another car. Let's buy three cars. Let's buy that computer we don't need. But then when it's bad, all of a sudden it's, well, where can I get my money? I gotta call Obama. He promised me he was gonna pay my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of concept that we are dealing with, unfortunately. Now, why is this all coming about? Part of it is because those folks that now, as that gentleman said before, you know, wants capitalism when it's good, and it wants socialism when we're not good, when we need money, is because they fail to understand the difference of what capitalism can do for you even in the bad times.
Earlier this week, Chris Matthews stated on his radio show that is very seldom viewed by anybody, that President Obama should come up with an alternative to capitalism and implement his alternative to capitalism. Is it that easy? Do you think it would be that easy for the President of the United States to simply abolish capitalism?
You sit right there, sweetheart. You say that? Baby, no, you're a sweet baby.
Okay,
Dr. Jones, I'm here.
Yeah.
This is what they think they can do, Obama would do. He would say, look at the profits of these different industries. If we take these industries over, we'll have the profits to fund Medicare and entitlements. So that's what they'll do. That's what they have done in Europe. They have taken over certain industries. And instead of the profits going into private hands, the profits go to fund socialist causes. And that's what Obama will do. He was, you know, $1.6 trillion on the sidelines. We'll pass laws. Hey, if you don't invest it, the government takes it. See, we already live in a socialist country. People just don't realize. You have to factor in all the regulations. We already there. We are.
Well, that brings me to my next clip. Let's listen to my main man, Ronald Wilson Reagan, and see what he has to say about this, what he had to say about it not so very long ago. And then I'd like for you all to, if you will, give your thoughts. Just a moment. Here we go.
Here are three radio commentaries from 1976 that express these themes. They are titled Socialism, Soviet Visas, and America's Strengths.
I guess all of us have had the experience of getting into a discussion and coming up with the right answer 2 hours later when we're all alone. I'll be right back. My award for someone who thought of the right answer while the discussion was still going on is a young man named Brad Lanaweaver, a member of Young Americans for Freedom at Pennsylvania State University.
Yes.
He has written of an encounter on the campus with a pretty young lady who believes socialism is the answer to our problems. His own philosophy was self-evident because he was wearing a button that proclaimed, "Cut down big government." With the cool breeze stirring her hair, she asked what Brad described as her ace-up-the-sleeve question. Even you right-wingers don't want to starve. Wouldn't you like a guarantee that you won't ever go hungry? Brad knew that if he admitted to this, she'd follow with, so why not such a guarantee for shelter, medicine, and all the rest? He paused, and then gave her the victory she was seeking, or so she thought. He said, sure, I'd like to lay my hands on everything I can get. Oh, she said, but the state is the closest you can come to such a guarantee. Brad described her as braced for a counterattack involving the magic of the market mechanism. But he threw another curb. Sure, he said, I grant that. There's something more. I'd like a guarantee of shelter and medical treatment and even some recreation. She must have thought she had a convert. A little shocked, she spoke, but that's what we support. Why are you wearing that button? She meant, of course, that cut-down big government button. Brad wasn't finished. He said to her, I would also like a yacht. Somewhat defeated, she answered, well, if you're not going to be serious about it. But I am, Brad said as earnestly as he could. I would really and truly like a yacht. Also a seaside villa. Look, she said sternly, you know what I'm talking about. Sharing. I'm not interested in your greedy daydreams. I'm asking what everyone should have. All right, Brad answered, I understand. Let everyone have a yacht. But how, she asked lucidly with the first sign of a rational thought. Don't bother me with that, he said. There'll be a way, I'm sure. Just so everyone has a yacht. However, there is one more thing I would like. What, she asked. Two yachts. Brad wrote that she looked rather unpleasant at that point, and he feared for his safety. Then she declared, it's people like you who keep socialism from working. And Brad agreed. Yes, quite right. Perhaps if people like me were put away somewhere, socialism would have a chance. By now she was really glaring as she tried to think of an answer. Brad continued, but there's still one problem. How many are there like me? Well, not as many as you think, she said, and walked away. And then Brad came up with a really appropriate last line. He wrote, there she's wrong, and that's why she's a socialist. How right he is. Socialists ignore the side of man that is of the spirit. They can provide shelter, fill your belly with bacon and beans, treat you when you're ill, all the things that are guaranteed to a prisoner or a slave. They don't understand that we also dream. Yes, even of sometime owning a yacht. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening. A modern-day Little Red Hen may not appear to be a quotable authority on economics, but then some authorities on economics aren't worth quoting. I'll be right back. About a year ago, I imposed a little poetry on you. It was called The Incredible Bread Machine and made a lot of sense with reference to matters economic. You didn't object too much, so having gotten away with it once, I'm going to try again. This is a little treatise on basic economics called The Modern Little Red Hen. Once upon a time, there was a little red hen who scratched about the barnyard until she uncovered some grains of wheat. She called her neighbors and said, if we plant this wheat, we shall have bread to eat. Who will help me plant it? Not I, said the cow. Not I, said the duck. Not I, said the pig. Not I, said the goose. Then I will, said the little red hen, and she did. The wheat grew tall and ripened into golden grain. Who will help me reap my wheat, asked the little red hen. Not I, said the duck. Out of my classification, said the pig. I'd lose my seniority, said the cow. I'd lose my unemployment compensation, said the goose. Then I will, said the little red hen, and she did. At last it came time to bake the bread. Who will help me bake bread, asked the little red hen. Oh, that'd be overtime for me, said the cow. I'd lose my welfare benefits, said the duck. I'm a dropout and never learned how, said the pig. Well, if I'm to be the only helper, that's discrimination, said the goose. Then I will, said the little red hen. She baked 5 loaves and held them up for her neighbors to see. They all wanted some, and in fact demanded a share. But the little red hen said, no, I can eat the 5 loaves myself. Excess profits, cried the cow. Capitalist leech, screamed the duck. I demand equal rights, yelled the goose. And the pig just grunted. And they painted unfair picket signs and marched round and round the little red hen, shouting obscenities. When the government agent came, he said to the little red hen, "You must not be greedy." "But I earned the bread," said the little red hen. "Exactly," said the agent. "That's the wonderful free enterprise system. Anyone in the barnyard can earn as much as he wants. But under our modern government regulations, the productive workers must divide their product with the idle." And they lived happily ever after, including the little red hen, who smiled and clucked, "I am grateful, I am grateful." But her neighbors wondered why she never again baked any more bread. I guess a lot of us have been wondering something like that. Incidentally, if you'd like to have a copy of The Modern Little Red Hen, don't write me, but write the station to which you're listening, and they'll send you a copy. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
There it is. There it is. That's what Ayn Rand spoke about in 1957. That's what I'm John Galt talks about. That's what many conservatives and even some Democrats are talking about. We deserve the fruits of our own labor without having to resort to a socialist system where we are forced to share our earnings, our winnings, with anybody forcibly. Tesla, what do you think about that? What do you think about Ronald Reagan's stories? I thought they were great. I'd heard the stories many times back when I was a young child, and I thought they were pretty cool.
Well, obviously, Ronald Reagan is the quintessential storyteller of our times when it comes to things conservative. And I think that there are a lot of Americans today who need to listen to those stories one more time and ask themselves, is this what you want to listen to, or do you want to listen to that man in the White House? Is that, I mean, these stories are unbelievable. So opposite, opposite to each other. Do you really, I think the stories you're talking about are the very stories that Americans need to learn again, again, and again, and see again. As I saw 20 and 30 years ago, I remember some of those. My God. And I think we all have to understand what we're really dealing with this president.
Exactly. Once we get to the point, And unless this president is defeated next November, we will get to the point where I will be forced to give up the things I own, the things I've worked for, in piecemeal, most likely, little by little, to satisfy those who are considered to be less fortunate. An example of what President Obama said a couple of months ago when he said that why should the fat cat corporate jet owners fly around in their corporate jets when a mother is sitting at her kitchen table trying to figure out how to send her child to college? What does one have to do with the other, I wonder? It's class warfare. It's taking from successful people in order to give to those who are not successful. Absolutely. What does the president think is going to happen? That's just
right.
Simply going to be the norm, that folks are going to go with that? Or is it going to be more like the hen story? I mean, when Ronald Reagan told this story, it was simple, easy to understand, and it made perfect sense. And I think if our politicians got out and started talking in these terms to the American people, any notion of socialism would be dismissed out of hand. Because
That's right. These
are the types of understandings. I mean, not that Americans are simple-minded or not very bright, but when you put it in personal, simple terms, it's understood. It's understood, and it makes perfect sense. Now, the way that Ronald Reagan told – yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think I figured it out. See, for Obama to fix this economy, he'll have to adopt Republican ideologies. So instead of, like, abolishing the EPA, or, you know, we're spending, what, $600 billion extra in energy costs. Instead of reducing regulations, getting the government out of the way, adopting Republican ideologies, which he knows, because they, I don't care what anybody says, they have some of the brightest people in the world working in the White House. They know how to get this economy back up and going. They don't want to adopt Republican ideas. So they'll push more towards, we need to take over industries. We need to, you know, if you don't get the $1.6 trillion off the sidelines, then we'll have to take it from you. Obama knows the Republican ideas can fix the economy. He doesn't want to adopt our ideologies, because if he does, to the election. What do you think about that, Dr. Jones?
I agree. The president is more interested in this notion of spreading the wealth. He simply doesn't understand the ramifications. He doesn't understand that the United States of America simply doesn't work this way, and it won't. We will not be drawn into a socialist society. We are too ingrained in freedom. And we're just too damn arrogant. Let's just put it that way. We want what we want, and we don't want anything given to us, the majority of us. We want to earn what we earn, and we're greedy folks. Greed is good, in my opinion. Now, we've got Southern on. Southern, I'm sorry I didn't get you. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Doctor, how you doing tonight?
Good. I'm doing great. Southern Sense has a wonderful show on. And when are the show? When are your shows on now? 3 days a week?
Oh, it's 3 days a week. It's Tuesday and Friday, mm-hmm. 2 to 3:30. Probably going to go up to 2 hours, 2 to 4 soon. On Saturday, we have a special one which starts at 7 in the evening, and it's called Piss and Moan, where people can call in and piss and moan about anything. But I got to tell you, tomorrow we've got a really super person coming on. Adam Shepard, he wrote a book called Scratch Beginnings, and it was a retort to Nickel and Dime, a woman named Ehrlich wrote, where she decided she was going to try to be one of these homeless people and work minimal wage jobs and everything else, and she's a complete progressive. So, of course, she screwed everything up deliberately. He mm-hmm. did the same exact thing with $25 in his pocket. She started off with $1,500. And couldn't make it. He started off with $25 in his pocket. Over a 10-month period, he was able to pull himself out of a homeless shelter, get a furnished apartment, buy a car, and have $5,000 in the bank. That means each month he put $500 away.
Wow.
So he's going to be on my show tomorrow. And guess what? I joined the big boys. I got my show featured tomorrow.
Excellent. Finally. Well, I, you know what? That finally wasn't for you. It was for me, because I've been trying to get my latest shows featured and to no avail. I even had to write a nasty letter to Blog Talk. Wonderful.
Oh,
that is great news.
I've been going show after show after show, and finally they said, congratulations, tomorrow you'll see it 24 hours ahead. I said, I've been checking every now and then, but they said Southern Sense is going to be featured tomorrow. But you were talking about Ayn Rand and stuff, mm-hmm. and I had a debate with a young couple that was renting a property from me, and unfortunately they left me high and dry with a lot of money they owed me and everything else. They were a couple that were getting everything handed to them on the dole, and when I walked into the place they were renting after they left, after leaving me deep in the hole, and actually it wasn't just me, it was my parents, I was crying. I was absolutely crying. When you get something for free, when the government hands you anything and everything completely for free, you have no respect for it. You haven't. You have not worked hard. You have not earned it. You don't deserve it because you have not earned it. If you're someone that is disabled or something like that and you can't work for it, they will appreciate it because, you know what, they know they can't work for it. And anything you can do, you can help them, they appreciate it. But if you can work for it and you get it handed to you for free, what is the point of working? And this is what we're facing. This is what our society is starting to do. And I also had a debate with this individual about intellectual property. He seemed to feel that if you, for example, had discovered the cure for cancer. It was your obligation to give it to the world for free. Excuse me? This is my intellectual property. I worked hard for it. Yes, it will benefit people. And it, you cannot tell me I must give it to the world for free. No. If I choose to do it, it is my choice.
Yes.
Don't tell me I have to. If I can do it where I can make a profit, fine. If I can do it where I can benefit someone, fine. But it's my choice to do what I do with my intellectual property. And this is where Ayn Rand had it in Fountainhead. And this is a book a lot of people don't talk about. Everyone's talking about Atomic Shrugged. No one really talks about Fountainhead, where intellectual property, your work, your imagination, your ideas are your own. No one owns them, and no one has the right to take them away from you and claim it as their property.
So that's exactly right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the Fountainhead, Howard Rourke's speech at the very end of the book, and indeed the movie, summed it up exactly. Exactly. But there are those, as you've encountered, and we all have, who believe that we should be forced, or we owe our work to someone else. When the light bulb and the telephone were invented, after years and years of failures, countless failures, the inventors give those means away for free.
No.
So that people and today, even today, there's a pretty penny being charged for these inventions long after they've been perfected and reperfected and reinvented. People, sure, a telephone will benefit us all if we had it for free. But
well, this is one of the points I was making on my show a while back, and this is something the Obama administration has been doing. What they did was they allowed Congress to take the funds out of the Patent and Copyright Office and use it for other things. The same thing they did, government has done for Social Security and everything else. Opened that lockbox and drained it. They did the same thing to the Patent Copyright Office. So people that now submit their applications to patents and copyrights, by law they must do that, find themselves stuck in a forever tunnel. They're not being approved because they don't have the funds to approve these copyrights. But if they're not approved within 18 months, they go up on the internet. And there are teams, streaming teams of people in India, Pakistan, China, waiting for those designs and inventions to hit the internet. And as soon as they do, they download them and they steal them. They legally steal them because our own government will not approve them. So by and by, the Obama administration has spread the wealth. They have taken away what Rourke had fought for in Fountainhead.
Exactly. And there's so much of that going on with this administration that's not being presented to the public. Tesla, jump in here. You have a show, a great show, conservative. I'm sorry, hoops. Socialism is not an option. What do you think about what Southern Sense just said? Tesla fell asleep. He probably went to take a nap. He went to make a sandwich, probably.
He get another cup of coffee. He loves that Korean coffee, yes.
I'm here, Dr. Jones.
Okay, Steve, go ahead. Yes. Jump in here real quick.
See, Obama's like a world type of guy. World. So I can see him selling out our people, giving technologies to other nations. And I think the only way the Bible can be fulfilled is if we have a great centralized power in this nation. I think we should need to use, if we get in office next year, hopefully pray to God it's not a rhino. That's why I really like to vote for Ron Paul. Pray to God. Pray before you vote for anybody, because if we vote for a rhino, we're done. If another Bush gets in there, oh, my God, we're done. But we need the constitutional amendments to balance the budget. It stripped the executive power. As these executive orders are killing us, folks. These executive orders are constantly taking our rights away. Like the alphabet agencies, we need to trash them. We can get this economy back up and going. But if we let Obama get reelected, folks, I think you might as well sell all your gold and move to Australia, Dr. Jones.
I'm sorry, I came in a little bit late, and I don't know who your other caller is, but do you mean you want a decentralized government or a centralized government? Because if you
I want to decentralize it.
Right,
the only way there's great tyranny any time in history, going back 4,000 years, is when there's a great centralized government. Even under kings, when the king was a loving king, the whole nation prospered. When the king was tyrannical, the whole nation suffered. So we need to decentralize. Federal Reserve, it needs all of it needs to be decentralized.
What I caught you saying earlier, you said we need a good central power. And that threw me off.
I said it wrong. Yeah, I'm sorry.
that's what threw me.
The Bible, what I was stating was for the Bible to be fulfilled. For the Bible to be fulfilled, there's going to be there has to be a great centralized tyranny. For there to be the mark of the beast and all this other stuff, there has to be a centralized tyranny in place to enforce that tyranny. If we decentralize it, if we decentralize it, we'll have more freedom. And see, the Federal Reserve, they're really killing us right now. And the EPA is in the ATF. They're really hurting us right now. So go ahead, Dr. Jones.
Well, the discussion is really starting to heat up a little bit, but we are running out of time. We have just under 3 minutes left. So we'll pick this up. On Saturday or Monday or Sunday. I do rerun some shows during the weekend, but certainly on Monday we'll pick it up again, and we'll continue on with the capitalist versus socialist discussion. I want to thank everybody for listening, for calling in, Beach Bum, Blog Talk King, all the guests. Southern, thank you for calling in. Steve, Net King, Pendleton Marines, Republican Marines, everybody for calling in and taking the time to out of your busy evening. I know there are plenty of things that you could be doing other than listening to my show, and I appreciate that you take the time to listen. It's really a great honor. Thank you all for being here. Have a great night, and we'll talk again. All right, thank you very much.
Good night.
Y'all have a great night. All right. We are out. 347-884-8500, the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. Tomorrow we'll be rerunning one of my favorite shows as I move on to Tesla's show, which is at 9 p.m. tomorrow night, the roundtable discussion. It's going to be great. So everybody tune in tomorrow, 9 p.m. to Tesla's show. I'll be there. I will not be running a live show on Fridays because I really do appreciate Tesla's show, and I kind of like to participate in his show. So I will be on Saturday and Sunday running some of my favorite shows there as well. Thank you all very much. Have a wonderful night. Once again, thank you all for listening. If we start again, please.
I think you've made your point now. You've even gone a bit too far to get the message home before.